This is Mary Lewis at A Tiny Homestead, the podcast comprised entirely of conversations with homesteaders, cottage food producers, and crafters. Today I'm talking with Gao at Uprooted Coffee. Good morning, Gao. How are you?
Good morning, Mary. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So tell me about Uprooted Coffee and how that got started.
Thank you. Thanks for giving us some time today. So I own Uprooted Coffee with my husband, Saimani Labut, and we have two teenage children, ages 14 and 17. So Uprooted started in 2022 during the pandemic. Actually started a little bit before that, but officially launched in 2022. A little background about myself is that I am Hmong American, born and raised in St. Paul. My husband is Lao American. He came to this country in the mid 80s with his family, and they lived in Atlanta, Georgia. They lived in Sacramento, California, and then his family ended up here in Minnesota. And so now they've called Minnesota home for the past 25 years. And so both of our families are from the country of Laos. And, you know, my husband has been drinking coffee forever. He's kind of our resident coffee snob and always had an interest in coffee. And so we started Uprooted Coffee during a time where he was doing a little bit of freelance, but, you know, just had more time on his hands and really finally had the time to dig deep into kind of his passions and his interests and started there.
Nice. I don't consider myself a coffee snob. I consider myself a coffee fiend. I love coffee. I love it cold. I love it hot. I love it instant. It doesn't matter.
That's so great to hear.
Yeah. So do you guys have a shop, or are you home-based and you ship coffee, or how does it work?
Yes, we don't have a brick and mortar. We are mostly through internet sales and in-person markets. But we do have an office location that we've rented. And so we do a lot of our, coffee work from there, packaging and all of that sort of stuff. So luckily we don't have that here at home, but we can work remotely for the most part. And then the packaging stuff happens in our office space.
Okay. So you were telling me when we were talking in messages that you don't actually obviously grow coffee, because it's Minnesota and coffee would never grow here.
Yes. Yes.
And that you don't roast it. So who does your roasting for you?
So the process is that we really look for coffee that our focus in coffee is Arabica beans, single origin, and specialty grade. So those are kind of the criteria that we look for. Obviously, and grown in Southeast Asia, that's all we do, is look for sell coffee from Southeast Asia in the U.S. market. So those are kind of our criteria. And then we look for cooperatives or smaller producers that are growing great coffee, and then we get them shipped here as green beans. So coffee has not been roasted yet. It gets to us, and then we, mostly my husband, sample roasts it, sometimes at home, sometimes in our office space. But we try to figure out what we want to roast it at. And so once we figure that out, he's really a data person, and figures out which roast brings out the best taste for this specific coffee. And then we get it roasted in Minneapolis at Roastery 7.
So you guys do dabble in the roasting to see what works.
We do just a little bit. Yeah, we have just a very small roaster, just to make sure that what we're asking from the roastery is actually what we want.
Okay, and you guys do like flavored roasts as well, or is it just a straight coffee?
Just a straight coffee. Yeah.
Okay, that's the kind I like. My husband, my husband really likes the one that tastes like it has rum in it.
Oh, sure.
A bunch of different names through different companies for it, but we we tend to get Cameron's coffee when we get it for home.
Oh, sure.
And they do a Highland grog. And to me, it tastes like eggnog and coffee mixed together. And he loves that one. I actually made a pot this morning because I didn't want to grind my beans. So that was the one that was ground.
Oh.
And it makes the house smell like Christmas every time I grind it up. I mean, roast up. I'm sorry. Every time I brew a pot of this coffee, it smells like Christmas. I have so many coffee terms running around my head, I can't pick one.
Coffee is a magical smell, and it's hard to replicate that any other way than just to brew a fresh cup.
Yeah, and it never actually tastes like it smells when it's brewing. I keep saying to my husband, I keep getting really nice dark roast beans, and I grind them, and they smell amazing when I grind them, and then I put them in my coffee maker, and they smell amazing while they're brewing, and then it never tastes like it smells.
You're absolutely right.
I try not to be disappointed. I try to remember that it's not going to taste like it smells.
Yeah.
Do you know why that is? Is it just that our olfactory senses process the smell differently than our taste buds process the taste?
I don't know, but I love that smell in our house. In the morning smells like a coffee house, so I love that. And I myself am not a big coffee drinker, so I'm just getting into it now. But I have learned to I used to put a lot of cream and sugar in my coffee. And now I can appreciate just black coffee. And so I'm getting there.
I will drink black coffee if I must. But I really like cream sugar in it. So I have questions that I'm not sure you're going to want to answer. And if you don't want to, that's fine.
Okay.
I will just edit it out. Mm-hmm. Is it expensive to ship the seeds or the beans from Asia? You said Asia, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To here.
So what we do is we look for U.S. distributors that have already imported the coffee.
Oh.
So we work with those U.S. distributors. It's really hard to import coffee, any sort of food products into the United States, but green coffee beans still have the moisture in them. So they're really heavy. So it's really expensive. And so there are several distributors that are already importing, coffee from Southeast Asia. There's just not a huge market for it. And it's hard. It's kind of a catch-22 because you want to introduce it into the U.S. market. You want people to drink it, but no one knows that it exists, you know, so people are not asking for it. And so part of our goal is to get people excited about coffee from Southeast Asia.
Okay. So you were saying when I emailed you about being a guest that you weren't sure you fit the bill.
Yeah.
You fit the bill because you're trying to do things in a way that is sustainable, and you're trying to help the smaller coffee producers, mm-hmm. bean. Mm-hmm. And there was another thing and I just blanked on it.
Well, you're right. And actually, when I thought more about whether or not we would fit, I did think about who we select to work with. You know, a lot of them are co-ops. A lot of them are really small producers. They are working in small villages, you know, villages that have been growing coffee, the coffee plant, for decades, but there wasn't a market for it. They didn't have the infrastructure to export it or to grow larger, a lot, to produce a lot. And so there are more coffee producers coming into smaller villages and helping the locals kind of understand what it takes to process coffee for export. And so that in and of itself, and they're doing it the slower way, you know, slowly produced. These are coffees that are grown on existing forest floors. They're not tilling land for it. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, it allows for the plants to grow in harmony with the current environment, but also coffee plants that are grown in shade, which a lot of these are, get to mature a little bit slower, at a slower rate. And so they get to produce sweeter beans. And so we all benefit from that. So there's, you know, there's a lot of ways in which it's, if it's kind of the homesteading kind of slower pace. Also, the beans are hand harvested. So we're not taking tractors out there and harvesting these plants. Most of them are hand harvested and picked at the peak of the bean. And so they're allowed to really mature to their to their best, you know.
Nice. Yeah. That's great. Okay, so I have other questions, and I had a whole list in my head. I need to start writing notes for the interview because I get listening and I get caught up in it and I forget what I was going to ask. So what's the shelf life on the green coffee beans? Like, how long can they be stored in a warehouse?
Yeah, I think it depends on how they're stored. And so the beans that come to us are stored in specialty coffee bags that allow for it to have a longer shelf life. So it could be a couple years, you know, the fresher the crop, the better. But, you know, they're as long as how you're keeping them is climate controlled, it's in, you know, bags that don't allow things from the outside to seep in, it should be pretty good. Once a coffee is roasted, the clock starts ticking. And so we don't want beans that are roasted and sitting on shelves for years and years and years. And part of the problem with what you find at the store is when coffee is produced at that mass level and sold in, you know, the big box stores, they don't have to tell you what the roast date is of that bean. And so they're able to sit on the shelves for, I don't know, much, much longer. They just have to have a best buy date. And so it's hard for you to know when they are roasted. We started putting roast dates on our labels. And customers were telling us that they didn't really know what that meant. And so we've now started to also put a best buy date. And for us, the best buy date is a lot more conservative than maybe what you're seeing at the big box stores. We tend to put the date as a year out from its roast date. So it's good for longer than that, but usually at the year mark, we pull it off the shelves and we try to just keep the freshest on our shelves.
Okay. So do you sell to grocery stores or do you just sell to people?
Right now we just sell to people. We are not at a place where we can scale up that much yet because no one's asking for coffee from Southeast Asia. There isn't a market for it. And so not a lot of people are actually importing coffee from Southeast Asia. So our job right now is to get people interested, get them to understand the coffee that they drink, where it's coming from, who's harvesting these beans, who does it impact on the ground, and get people excited for that. Eventually, we would love to get to a place where we can scale up a little bit. There are two places in the Twin Cities that serve our coffee, and one is the Sia Art Gallery on University Avenue in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And the other is Galuna, which is a Lao restaurant in Minneapolis.
Fun. That's amazing. I love that. So I'm going to ask a question about storing coffee at home. Mm-hmm. Because for years we have bought like the, I don't know, 2 or 3 pound bag of beans at wherever we buy it.
Yeah.
And it's sealed. Mm-hmm. And we live out in the middle of nowhere, so we do like a grocery run every 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so we'll buy coffee then, and if we need more, we'll get more. So when we buy the big bag of coffee beans, we put it in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And I've been told by a few people that that's a bad idea, and I've been told by a few people that's a good idea. So which is
it? Well, I'm not a coffee expert, but I've seen both responses, and I I think whatever works for you works for you. I think the important piece is that once the bag has been opened, it's once air has touched your beans from that vacuum seal or from being sealed at all, the clock starts ticking. And so whether you freeze it or don't freeze it, you want to drink it as soon as you can. And if you can't drink it, an airtight container is best. So we tend to just store ours here at home in an airtight container on the counter, away from moisture and the stove. So it's sitting next to a window, and in the winter here, it's pretty cool. So that tends to do it for us, but we do go through quite a lot of coffee. So we don't really let coffee sit.
Yeah. I mentioned to my husband the other day, I said, I'm going to be talking to a lady who knows about coffee. And he said, okay, ask her about that, because we're going to drink the coffee in the house, whether it's amazingly good or whether it's adequate, because it's going to get used. But he was really curious, and so was I.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, the way that I found Gal and Uprooted Coffee is because Gal and I actually both were awarded grants from the Market Entry Fund back in October of 23.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Our grant was to build a winter heated greenhouse. And I don't know what your grant was for. I assume it was just to continue your business, you know.
Yeah, so our grant is to work on marketing and branding, mostly because we've been doing a lot on our own. My husband and I both had full-time jobs. We were doing this as a side business, and neither of us come from a creative background. You know, I come from the philanthropic sector, where I was working in a human resources field, and my husband works in nonprofit. So when we started the business, it was really survival and getting things out there. But we want to reach a larger audience, and that has been, I think, one of our biggest challenges, is because no one knows that this coffee exists. It's really hard to drum up interest. And so we are working with a firm now as part of our grant to think about how we tell our story, to think about how we grab people's attention, people who maybe have not heard of Laos or Southeast Asia, or are just not familiar with coffee from there. We want people to try new coffee. We want people to try specialty coffee and get excited for coffee from Southeast Asia.
Yeah. So were you as dumbfounded when you got the news that you got the grant as we were?
Yes. Well, because the process took a little bit longer than expected. And so I, you know, sometimes when you apply for things and you don't hear back, you know, your hope starts to wane. And so we really did think we would have to just try another year when we were maybe more ready. But I don't think that there is a place where you feel like you're absolutely ready for any one thing. Because you're, you know, when you're a business owner, you're constantly moving and trying to hit that next goal. And so it's not a place where you get a lot of stability. And so I'm really glad that we did, but I did get to a point where I'm like, okay, this is not the year for that. And I'm really glad that that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I had actually, I had forgotten when they were going to announce who the grantees were.
Oh, sure.
And I got an email in October, and I looked at it, Market Entry Fund or whatever the subject line was, and I was like, oh, yeah, I should check that. And I read it and went, oh. And my husband heard me, and he said, what? And I said, do you want to build a heated greenhouse in the spring? And he said, well, yes, I do. I said, would you like some help with the fundage for that? And he said, did we get the grant? And I said, yes, we did. And he's like, oh, my God. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised, too, because the reason I'm surprised is because it took me exactly 15 minutes to answer the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a writer, so writing a description of what we wanted the grant for wasn't that big a deal. But I was like, wow, I think that's the most money I've, quote unquote, made in 15 minutes in my life.
I'm sorry. I cut you out.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
It's great. It's a great feeling to know that you have support out there, even for just your ideas, even if, you know, nothing exists yet or something small exists. So it's a great feeling to get that validation, in a sense, to continue to go towards your dreams and your goals, because we don't get a lot of that as entrepreneurs and as people who are doing the things. It's hard to find funding for what it is that we want to do. So congratulations to us.
Yes, exactly. And congratulations to you. I think it's great that there are things like that in the world.
Yeah.
I was going to say, have you applied for the Amber Grant by any chance?
I've not heard of that.
I will message you the information.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
for
you.
Women. It's for women owned businesses. So I don't know if you're listed as owner. And if you aren't, then I don't know if it worked, but I'll send you the information.
Okay. I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Yep. I applied for it last spring and we were not ready for it. And my application was too broad because we had like five different things we were doing.
Oh, sure.
And so it wasn't the right time, and that's fine because I completely agree. It wasn't the right time. We hadn't drilled down enough on what we were going to focus on.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I just wanted to promote the fact that you were a grant designee or
awardee. Thank you.
Whatever the word is, because I think that's fantastic.
Thank you.
So I'm trying to think of other things here because I love coffee, and I actually have a pot downstairs, and I don't drink coffee while I'm interviewing because coffee makes you need to go to the bathroom.
Yes, it does.
And I don't want to have to interrupt this to step out to use the bathroom.
Well, maybe I can talk a little bit about kind of what the type of coffee that we sell.
Yeah.
Is that helpful?
Sure.
So we, as I mentioned earlier, we look for coffee that is 100% Arabica, and that is because Arabica tends to be sweeter, slightly smoother. It generally has less caffeine, and is harvested for its taste versus Robusta, which is the other coffee plant. And Robusta is not, any worse. It's just preference for people. So Robusta tends to be stronger on the coffee side, the coffee tasting. It's a bitter notes, and it generally contains more caffeine. And so we focus on Arabica beans grown in Southeast Asia. We also focus on single origin. That means that we don't sell blends. We don't make any blends of our own. All the coffee that we sell is from the same place. So, you know, our Sam Thai is all grown in the Sam Thai region. Our Sing Kwang blend is not blend. Our Sing Kwang is all grown in the Sing Kwang region. So single origin is really important to us. And then we sell specialty coffee. So specialty coffee is coffee that is that has met a high standards throughout the life cycle of that coffee, from growing and processing and then the taste of the coffee. So there's a 100-point scale developed by the Specialty Coffee Association that's used to grade coffee. And specialty coffee is at the top of that scale. So to be able to be classified as specialty coffee, the coffee has to score between 80 and 100 to be labeled specialty. So it's a special word to look for if you're big on coffee. When you're buying coffee, to look for specialty coffee, I do think that it does make a big difference in the taste of the coffee. And so those are the things that we look for when we sell or buy our coffee green, our green coffee beans. And what's important to us is also that the farmers are, you know, that they are benefiting from growing the coffee, that their environment is not damaged by the growth of the coffee where they live. A lot of the farmers are hand-picking these coffee beans, and so it's important for us to make sure that we're they live and their families are supported by the industry. So that's a little bit about the type of coffee that we source.
Okay.
Right now, we carry coffee from Indonesia, Laos, and Thailand. And we get coffee we get coffee as they are made available. So we don't, you know, whatever we carry now, we won't carry in, you know, perpetuity. Like it is what's available to us,
is it sort of like in season for produce?
Yeah, kind of, because you know, each crop is a little bit different, and we want to explore a little bit about the different co-ops, the different farmers, the different communities that it's coming from. We want a little bit of all of that, and so we sometimes have the opportunity to purchase from the same growers, and sometimes we do. We have gone back if it's been popular with our customers, but we also want to introduce new flavors to our customers, and so we tend to shop around a lot.
Okay, so when you were talking about the specialty coffee, what's the criteria for having that rating that you were talking about?
Well, it's a 100-point scale, and it's inspired by the 100-point scale that wine is graded on. And part of that is, you know, physical appearance, taste. I'm going to pull up my notes, because they were just – there's the Specialty Coffee Association is just updating kind of the scale. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, it's based on physical, sensory, descriptive, affective, and extrinsic. So they're really looking for – you know, the mouthfeel, the sweetness. It's done through a cupping process where individuals who are what in the field considered Q graders, it's certified graders of coffee, they get to taste the coffee and use the scale to grade the coffee.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So it's a lot like wine tastings.
It's a lot like wine tasting, yes. And okay. And more so now with the updated, not a rubric. I want to say rubric, but it's kind of the process that they use. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, like I have said a billion times, well, maybe not a billion times, I've only recorded like 21 of these, but in the 21 times I've recorded people, I try to keep these 30 minutes. The last three recordings I've done have been almost an hour each. So we're actually going to keep this within 30 minutes today.
Yay!
Gal, I really do appreciate you taking the time. You absolutely did fit my description for the podcast.
Thank you.
I wish you all the luck in the world with this, because I know starting a business is really difficult sometimes, especially if you don't have deep pockets to start with.
And absolutely.
And it sounds like you guys jumped in with both feet and you are swimming as fast as you can in the pool.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Mary, for your time.
Yeah, you too. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, bye.